a trap of the two countries?
Well, first of all, the so-called that trap has got to do with China's Belt and Road Initiative. So goes the rhetoric that the China's Belt and Road Initiative is entrapping the recipient countries, but the reality is nothing of the sort, according to recent research conducted by a UK-based charity called Debt Justice. According to the latest research, in fact, the recipient countries are more indebted to Western commercial lenders multiple times compared with the debt incurred under China's Belt and Road Initiative. But coming back to Sri Lanka, which of course is the poster child of the so-called debt trap diplomacy, because the indebtedness of Sri Lanka to China has resulted in giving the port, the Hambantota port, to China under almost a 100-year lease in payment of the debt. But the reality remains that even before the Hambantota port project, Sri Lanka was already heavily in debt to, as I said, Western commercial lenders. Now, coming back to the rivalry between India and China, of course, this is across the board on all fronts. For a decade, India has been losing ground to China as far as Sri Lanka is concerned. But now it's now making up for lost grounds, extending a lot of loans, much needed loans to Sri Lanka, including some projects on fisheries and ports, and also giving a credit, something like $4 billion credit to Sri Lanka. So all this has been much well received in comparison with only about $60 to $70 million dollars debt, additional debt given by China. Under India's new neighborhood first policy, is trying to build up stronger relations with its neighboring countries, including Sri Lanka, which of course was under Indians' influence a decade ago before China came in. But China's strength, of course, is not just in the these projects, which of course part of the Belt and Road Initiative, as I said. The Belt and Road Initiative is linked to the world's largest trading bloc, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, consisting of the ASEAN countries, together with the major trading partners in the region. This RCEP, Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, is the world's largest trading bloc, accounting for one-third of the world's economy and one-third of the world's population. But unfortunately, India is not has chosen not to be part of it. And China is right at the heart of this regional Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership trading bloc. In the sense that China is the center of the regional supply and value chain. China, of course, is the largest trading partner, not only in the region, but in the world. It's the largest manufacturer. It's a huge internal market. So China's got all these strengths, and the jury is still out on whether India or China in Sri Lanka.
So, Mr. Leung, both India and China have their own interests in the South Asian island country. So how much is this debt trap diplomacy going to affect the sovereignty of Sri Lanka?
Sri Lanka still remains very jealous of its own sovereignty. And it's, even with all these loans from India, Sri Lanka remains relatively a little bit suspicious of the reversion of reoccurrence of India's hegemony over India, over Sri Lanka. But I think that In recent years, all ASEAN countries, in fact, most of the developing world, are very conscious of their own sovereignty. No country wants to be under another country's thumb. But nevertheless, the reality remains that all countries depend on the economy, and the economy depends on the world trade and also foreign investments. And China, of course, is the largest trader, and it's also the largest foreign source of foreign investment. And as I said, with the Belt and Road linking the whole world together to the global and supply to its global supply and value chain, as the world's largest trader and manufacturer and the world's largest consumer market, so China's got all the advantages.
Last but not least, sir, following New Delhi, Beijing has given financing assurance to Sri Lanka for the IMF bailout package. So do you think Sri Lanka will come out of this economic crisis anytime soon?
Well, the India's lending to Sri Lanka recently is also depending on the IMF bailout. But as experienced by many developing countries around the world, the IMF bailout comes with a lot of conditions imposed on their own governance, the system, make the system much more open to outside influence or outside investments than some countries are prepared to concede. So it remains to be seen whether Sri Lanka would embrace all the conditions in order to accept this bailout. And then the willingness of Sri Lanka's acceptance of the IMF conditions would also affect its future, the ease with which Indians attempt to recover its influence in Sri Lanka. So it all depends on what the IMF bailout would be, what the conditions are, and to what extent the Sri Lankan government is prepared to accept those conditions.
There you have it, Mr. Andrew K.P. Leung, an international and independent China strategist from Hong Kong. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Wang Xiaoyan, the spokesperson of the Chinese embassy in India, writes, China stands ready to work with relevant countries and international financial institutions and continue to play a positive role in helping Sri Lanka navigate the situation, easing its debt burden and helping it achieve sustainable development. One of the Indian news channels tweeted, on close ties with China, Foreign Minister Ali Sabri said Sri Lanka has never undermined India's interests and will not allow anyone else to threaten India's security concerns. Dr. R. De Silva says, another Western competing view of foreign interference in Sri Lanka and on the behavior and motives of the IMF. Views we must consider include the West, Africa, China, Russia, and India. Imperative is, however, the effects on the well-being of Sri Lankans. Sitan Sibal, a journalist, said, days after India announced its support for Sri Lanka's debt restructuring, China rushed to extend support. Sri Lankan media reports says government in Colombo rather disappointed with Chinese letter and Beijing's response fell short of what was expected.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
The Pakistani government and the Russian energy minister Nikolai Shulginov, who was in Islamabad just recently for an annual intergovernmental commission on trade and economy, said the key elements of the energy deal between the two countries will be finalized by March this year. Pakistan and Russia have also agreed to strengthen their ties in the areas of energy cooperation, enhancing energy trade, and also to broaden energy infrastructure investment. According to the two sides, comprehensive gas infrastructure plan for energy cooperation is going to be the stepping stone for future deals between Moscow and Islamabad, with other things remaining the same.
Pakistan is going to be Russia's new energy partner. The two sides have agreed to pay for the energy purchases in the currencies of the friendly countries. The announcement was made at the conclusion of the 8th session of the Pakistan-Russia Intergovernmental Commission, IGC, on Trade, Economic, Scientific and Technical Cooperation, which took place last week in Islamabad. The friendly country is likely to be China, which shares good relations with both Russia and Pakistan. This move is expected to affect the monopoly of the dollar as being the reserve currency of the world. Countries like China, Iran, Russia, and Venezuela have already done trade deals in local currencies, thus challenging the hegemony of the U.S. dollar.
De-dollarization is certainly the way to go. I don't know exactly how Russia and Pakistan plan to proceed payments, but I'm sure a way will be found. And let me remind you that just last year, Iran has signed a deal with China. Iran will supply huge amounts of oil to China, worthy probably of billions of dollars, $300 billion. This amount was mentioned. Obviously, Pakistan and China found a way to make payments for this oil. And obviously, these payments are not going to be made in dollars because Iran has been switched off from the SWIFT system under pressure from the United States. So we know the story. Obviously, if Iran found a way to trade oil with China and to get payment for it without dollars, then probably the same solution can be found between Russia and Pakistan, even though it was not immediately clear how this deal will be proceeded with financially.
Pakistan officials had visited Moscow last year to explore the possibility of the import of crude oil from Russia on discounted rates. After a series of talks, the two countries agreed that the import of crude oil to the cash-stripped South Asian country will take place from March this year. Both Moscow and Islamabad acknowledged the importance of this growing relationship for the economic progress of both the countries and also of the region.
That Russia is going to conclude with Pakistan. If everything works out, then according to the information of the Russian energy minister, Mr. Shulginov, Russia will be able to supply 35% of Pakistan's needs in crude oil. This is a lot. And of course, Iran could also participate in this process of providing oil and energy to Pakistani industry. I don't know in what state the pipeline is, which should connect Iran and Pakistan. This is for the Iranian side, maybe, to clarify. But Russia would have nothing against joint efforts of Russia and Iran in supplying for the needs of developing countries. Pakistan is a country that we have a friendly relationship now with. There was a period in the Soviet times when Pakistan became a sort of an agent of the United States. It was under the dictatorial regime of Ziaul Haq. But that was long ago. Times have changed. Now we know very well that Pakistani people have a positive view of Russia. They view Russia as an ally. They're very much angry with the United States after the drone war and other cruelties that Americans have committed against Pakistanis.
Pakistan's foreign exchange reserves have depleted to about $4.6 billion, barely enough to cover a month's oil imports. In this situation, Islamabad has decided to buy oil at discounted rates from Moscow to protect its deteriorating financial situation. to defend this move, the country has cited India's example, which has been buying oil from Russia for a long time now. This deal appears to be a win-win situation for both the countries, as Pakistan would want to be a part of the regional bloc that has Moscow and Beijing as its important members, and in turn, Russia's close ties with Islamabad will have an impact on the security and strategic stability in the region.
Historically, Pakistan did not share close commercial ties with Russia. Islamabad has been dependent for oil on the Persian Gulf countries, especially Saudi Arabia and the UAE. However, this trend seems to be changing with Pakistan's announcement that the country is intending to fulfill 35% of its crude oil imports through Russia. Getting Russian oil will reduce the market share of the Arab countries and may also have an impact on the diplomatic and trade relations Islamabad shares with these countries.
Well, Persian Gulf countries understand that this is the market. Everyone is looking for customers. Everyone is looking for markets. Russia did not protest when Germany decided to replace Russian gas on its market by gas from Qatar. We have nothing against it. This is market. However, I would say that it was very stupid of Germany to insult Qataris during the soccer, during the football World Cup in Qatar, by constantly mentioning the theme of homosexuals living in Qatar. Germany should be busy with its own affairs. It should not insult other countries, especially those who invited with its shitty team to the international sports events. So I think sooner or later, European countries will become unwanted clients for Persian Gulf states, simply because Europeans are getting so rude and unbearable in, even in diplomatic ties.
It is important to mention that this development comes at a time when the G7 countries are scheduled to meet in March to review the price cap on exports of Russian oil. The growing bonhomie between Russia and Pakistan can be a cause of concern for the West, also because of Islamabad's strategic location in the region. Having signed agreements for cooperation in the customs and aviation sector as well, thus improving relations between the two countries, is worrying for the U.S. and its allies, as it will probably allow Russia to challenge the presence of NATO in one of the world's most strategic zones.
Well, I don't think we need military aid from Pakistan, because Russia can defend itself on its own. We don't need, any weapons from Muslim countries which suffered from Western aggressions. And to my mind, what happened in Pakistan between 2001, when the United States occupied Afghanistan, and 2021, I think it was terrible. It was, Pakistan suffered almost as severely as Afghanistan during the bombings, during the drone attacks. So this is all over, thank God. Now, if Pakistan understands our fight, why we're defending ourselves from NATO, fine. We'll be happy to get diplomatic support. We'll be happy if Pakistan supports us politically. But I have not heard about any weapons supplies or any kind of military aid that we would require from Pakistan.
Now let's see what people had to say on the latest deal between Russia and Pakistan for the import of crude oil to the energy-starved country.
Tweeting about the currency, Centelets wrote, "Russia and Pakistan conclude an oil deal that will be settled in national currencies. Soon, no one will want to transact in U.S. dollars." Abdul Rahman, an investor, said, "Russia hints at Pakistan-Russia crude oil deal tentatively from March 2023. Most probably, Chinese yuan will be used for payment. Two important details still awaited. Pricing, discount, volume, 50 to 100,000 barrels per day would be great for Pakistan." Edek tweeted, "Russia and Pakistan agree major energy deal. Oil and gas exports from the sanctions-hit country will help the world's fifth most populous nation meet its demands."
And that was our episode about the Russia-Pakistan changing relation dynamics and its impact on world politics. And also, Sri Lanka's economic crisis with India and China competing to gain foothold in the island country. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
If we are on the path of Allah, He will help us to overcome our weaknesses. But what was the path of Allah? It is the divine guidance of Allah. If we do our best to benefit from the guidance of Allah, then we are able to benefit from His intercession too. However, if we are out of the path of guidance of Allah, we are in fact treading on a misguided path. But how the misguided people can find their way into the guidance of Allah? Repentance and asking for forgiveness is one way. Any misguided person must first repent for his or her sins and then asks for Allah's assistance. When such a person is on the path of Allah, then Ahlul Bayt can intercede for him on his way. One good example was Tayyib Rezai, one of the hooligans of Tehran, who repented and was executed for defending the late Imam Khomeini before the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In addition to the Palestinians of the occupied West Bank, Gaza Strip, and the occupied territories, thousands of people in some Islamic countries attended rallies to condemn the brutal crime of the Israeli regime, murdering 9 Palestinians in the Jenin refugee camp on Thursday, 26th of January. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Fox News Network reports, Israeli regime launched airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip just a day after martyring at least 10 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, prompting the Palestinian resistance to fire rockets at the occupied territories in retaliation. The Palestinian Information Center said Israeli warplanes raided areas of the West Bank and southern Gaza Strip, including posts belonging to the Palestinian resistance, on Thursday night, 26th of January, and Friday, 27th of January, at dawn. Palestinian citizens' homes have been severely damaged as a result of the violent Israeli airstrikes. In retaliation, the Palestinian resistance responded to the aggression by firing retaliatory rockets at illegal Israeli settlements surrounding the besieged Gaza Strip. Israeli media confirmed that at least 8 rockets were launched from the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military claimed that the rockets were intercepted by missile defenses and said there were no injuries reported. Security sources in Hamas said there had been 15 strikes on the enclave with no injuries reported so far. Hamas says Ezzedine al-Qassam brigades confirmed that its air defenses responded to the hostile Israeli warplanes in the skies of the Gaza Strip with surface-to-air missiles and anti-ground missiles. The Israeli air raids were carried out a day after 10 Palestinians were martyred in separate Israeli attacks in the occupied West Bank. 9 Palestinians lost their lives following a raid on Jenin refugee camp in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces gunned down a 10th Palestinian during clashes in the wholly occupied city of Al-Quds. In Jenin, more than 70 Israeli armed vehicles and hundreds of Israeli soldiers stormed a flashpoint city and a neighboring refugee camp, leaving the residents and popular Palestinian resistance groups with no choice but to defend themselves and confront the occupation forces. Among those murdered by the Israeli military in Jenin was a 61-year-old Palestinian woman identified as Majeda Obeid, who was martyred in her home while performing prayers. According to analysts, the Palestinian resistance has a legitimate right to defend itself in the face of Israeli aggressions that have been ongoing for decades, with major escalations taking place since the far-right extremist regime headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu took office in late December. Press TV's website has also covered the same story and tells us more. Thousands of Palestinians attended rallies to condemn the brutal crime of the Israeli regime in assassinating 9 Palestinians in the Jenin refugee camp on Thursday, 26th of January. Video footage shows Palestinian people chanting slogans against the Israeli occupying forces after Friday prayers on 27th of January at Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied city of Al-Quds. Furthermore, hundreds of people in the Gaza Strip and in Rafah took to the streets to slam the Israeli atrocities. A similar demonstration was also held in the Jordanian capital Amman after Friday prayers, with hundreds of people taking part. 9 Palestinians lost their lives following a raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. At least 20 Palestinians were wounded in this incident, including unarmed civilians. Jenin refugee camp resident Umm Yusuf al-Sawalmi said homes were hit during the raid. Windows, doors, walls and even the refrigerator, everything was damaged by the bullets. This is while the Israeli regime enjoys the support of Western countries, especially the United States, which observers believe has further emboldened the regime to continue its decades-long crimes against innocent Palestinians. Meanwhile, 3 United Nations experts, including Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territories, Francesca Albanese, deplored the Israeli violence. They said none of this violence would occur if Israel were to end its illegal half-century-old occupation immediately and unconditionally as required by international law. The experts added, the international community cannot and should not tolerate what appears to reflect Israel's deliberate policy and practice of using lethal force without regard for limits set by international law. Various countries have also, in a statement or by holding protests, slammed the Jenin massacre, including the Islamic Republic of Iran, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, and Bangladesh. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. An independent Irish member of the European Parliament has criticised the European Union for its silence on Israeli crimes, as the Tel Aviv regime continues to commit atrocities against Palestinians across the occupied territories. Mick Wallace, an Irish MEP, a member of the European Parliament, made the remark in a post on his Twitter account on Saturday, 28th of January, after the European Union released its Action Plan on Human Rights and Democracy 2022, in which there was no mention of the plight of Palestinians. Mick Wallace denounced the annual report as selective, noting that it has ignored the persecution and murdering of Palestinians by the Israeli regime. Pointing to the fact that at least 150 Palestinians were martyred by the Israeli regime forces last year, he lamented the bloc's failure to mention the issue in the report. Mick Wallace added, "How can we allow crimes to be committed against Palestinians every day and remain silent? These crimes would not have happened without our complicity." On Thursday, 26th of January, the Palestinian Authority, headed by Mahmoud Abbas, said it had decided to suspend security coordination with the Israeli regime in the occupied West Bank in reaction to the Jenin massacre. A statement issued after a Palestinian Authority meeting read, in light of the repeated aggression against our people and the undermining of signed agreements, including security, we consider that security coordination with Israeli occupation no longer exists as of now. The latest massacre in Jenin brought the total number of Palestinians martyred in Israeli fire so far in 2023 to 28, and that includes 5 Palestinian children. Israeli forces regularly conduct raids on various cities in the occupied West Bank on the pretext of detaining what they call wanted Palestinians. The unwarranted raids usually lead to violent confrontations with Palestinian residents. Over the past few months, Israel has ramped up attacks on Palestinian towns and cities throughout the occupied territories. As a result of these attacks, dozens of Palestinians have lost their lives and many have been arrested. Most of the raids have focused on Nablus and Jenin, where Israeli military have been trying to stifle a growing Palestinian resistance in the occupied cities. The United Nations marked 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank in the past 16 years.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to Islamic Upbringing. This is your host, Zainab. And in this program, we try to answer your questions, queries, and issues you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Professor Salman Naqafi, who is a faculty member at Al-Mustafa University, Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. It's an honor.
Well, Professor, we have been discussing about the issues of adolescence. We have one of the questions from a father from Netherlands who says he has 2 daughters. One is 16 and one is 18. The one who is 18 years old is quite different from the one who is 16. Well, I'm concerned about the one who is 16 years old because she has gadget in her hands for at least 8 hours a day. How do I teach this teenage girl the time management?
Yes, of course, sisters, siblings, even twins are not
of the same nature.
So it's a very difficult situation, of course, that we find 2 sisters and siblings different from each other and how to manage them separately. We can't use the same
policies,
techniques and
tactics
for both, which are the same. Therefore, we need to improvise and we need to understand the nature of each one of them and give them separate times and deal with them separately. You can't communicate with them or talk to them or give them time together. Of course, family times which are to be spent together, of course, that is important. That's a collective activity. But to discuss with both of them different issues or the same issue together is difficult. Now, if the elderly one is mature enough to make her sister realize what is necessary, then that would be a better course, maybe, instead of the father engaging with the younger one. Maybe the elder sister can assist the father in helping out the junior one. And otherwise, then we need to make, of course, 16 years is an age where many things have set in. I mean, the habits which have been developed.
Which were supposed to be moderated from a very early age, yes, are now very difficult,
it's difficult to deal with. But then you would need the advice of, again, a counselor how to deal with them. And if you yourself as a parent or as a father need to talk to your child, then you need to talk to them in a very mild way, and talk to them in a way that they feel that you're really concerned. And it's not that you're becoming upset because of that behavior. You need to make them realize that what you are saying is something which is because really you're concerned for them, and you want their well-being, and you make them understand that if you...
They have to see that care.
They should understand. The child, especially a girl who's turned... I mean, of course, it's been a time since she's become an adult girl, and she's now... But still, she's not mature enough to make the proper decisions, and she needs to be counseled, and she too needs to be... She needs to feel that she is really being loved by the person who is talking to her. The parents, the father especially, is concerned with the future. And he wants her child, he wants his girl and his daughter to prepare herself for the future life. And he says to her that, look, 8 hours of internet or being engaged with the virtual world is not going to make you a better person.
Yeah.
And if you want to become a better person, you need to be able to learn things, knowledge and skills, which are necessary for the future.
Yeah.
But if you're wasting your time on games and things which are not going to be beneficial at all, and it's all leisure time, then that's not worth it.
Yeah.
Okay, 1 hour, 2 hours is okay,
but 8 hours is
too much. Too excessive.
Yeah. We'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. From IRIB English Radio, this is Zainab with Professor Nagawi. And we are talking about a 16-year girl who spends at least 8 hours on her gadget. So Professor Nagawi is helping us to deal with this child, to teach her time management. Yes, Professor.
One of the issues which all of us must understand regarding time management is, as I again mentioned, the hadith, which mentions how we should divide up our time, daily time,
mm-hmm.
into time for resting, for leisure, for work, and for engaging with Allah Almighty in the special worships that we have, the ritualistic liturgical worships. So if we, number one, have an overall plan for our lives and a purpose for our lives, which has to be understood by the children, that we have an overall goal in life, and how do we reach that? We need to manage our lives properly in a balanced way. Yes, we need to have leisure time, there's no doubt about it, but not, it should be a specific time. And we, I suppose today, time managers or those who counsel us about time managing, they are very much emphasizing on the fact that we should make chunks of time specific for certain activities. For example, we...
Going back to the same prophetic hadith.
Yes, we need to be... it should be working as a cycle daily. We know from, for example, 6 in the morning, 5 in the morning, till 6 or 7, we're engaged in ibadah. 7 to 8, we have breakfast. 8 o'clock, we need to go out for work or for studies or whatever. Till maybe 4 o'clock, then when we come back home, then we have time with the family for leisure, for enjoyment, And then again in the evening we have prayers, and then we have, I mean, every chunks of time are specified for specific...
designed for particular things.
There should be a plan.
Yeah.
We should, of course, make a to-do list, but we should be able to, you know, make out at least, if not written, in a written form. Again, here, gadgets do help. I mean, so many applications are there.
So actually, taking away gadget from her is not a way out, is not a solution. But you are saying that the same gadget can be used to make timetable.
Exactly.
Because gadgets have those
so you have so many applications where you can make a, you can manage your lives, you can make your daily plan, you can make your weekly plan. So, I mean, in channelizing our children towards the positive usages of
you have task manager apps that help you, that
exactly.
It's your eating time, it's your exercise time, it's your worship time.
Very good. Yes, that is how we should be able to make them live with a program, with a plan, and they should have challenges to meet, they should have timelines to meet. So we need to learn project management and time management for anything. It's not just for making money, even making our lives more
fruitful. Yeah.
And so, I mean, these are things which the roots of these things have been mentioned in the narrations and the traditions that have been handed over to us over the centuries by the ulama from
and
the
obviously in the Holy Quran. And where in the Quran, we'll tell that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said, Honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and I am Zainab with Professor Nakavi. We're talking about a teenager who is 16 years old, and her father is concerned because the girl spends 8 hours on her mobile. We have this very beautiful surah, Professor, Wal Asr. Allah swears by the time that you are investing time, you're investing your life, but He then says, indeed, innal insana lafi khusr, indeed, the humankind is in deep loss. You are investing something, that is your time. But what you are getting is a great loss. Then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives some conditions who are not in loss. So, is it the contemplation of such surahs should be, actually discussed as debates in the family, which could help understand time management?
Of course, because certainly when we are talking about the surah Al-Asr, the importance of time is brought out by the fact that Allah is swearing by the very term Asr, which one of its meanings implies time. So
time.
The importance of time and its weightage is given there. إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ Good deeds. What are good deeds? Good deeds are things which are carried out properly, effectively, efficiently. Things done in the best possible manner.
Yeah.
Amal Saleh is not just carrying out ritualistic deeds. Even those ritualistic deeds, then there's prayers that we pray. There's management in it. There's a lesson to be learned. Things are done precisely. Things are done in harmony. Things are done managed in a time scale, according to a time scale. Everything is very much, you know, planned. In prayers, for example, 4 rakah, 2 rakah, everything has a very precise planning to it.
And there's also one more condition in the surah, وَتَوَاسُوا بِالْحَقِّ وَتَوَاسُوا بِالصَّبْرِ. Those who suggest people to come towards truth and those who suggest people to come towards patience.
Advise people. And yes.
Yeah, definitely, like, we want to spend more time on our entertainment devices, but patience, you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about patience over here, that you invite people towards patience, but I can't invite someone towards patience until and unless I practice patience myself. So I have to develop that patience of, like, if I want something, I don't go to it, because that's also one of the forms of patience.
Sabr, of course, patience, sabr. in the face of things which are wrong. We will have to control ourselves and abstain from doing that wrong. So we are patient. We exercise our patience and make us abstain from something which we shouldn't be doing. If we become in the habit, and usually we do become habitual regarding these gadgets, we're also very much fidgety. Every time we feel something, we need to pick up the...
We have this fear of missing out.
Exactly. So we need to pick up. Now, the moment we pick it up, oh, we should remember, maybe it's not the time to do it. Let's put it down. Let's keep the time
fixed.
So
there should be a no screen time rule in the family.
Exactly. So there are things which, the Holy Quran, even when it talks about this issue of doing good deeds, good deeds have to be planned. And we have...
They come with a proper timetable.
With a proper time. The planning has to be done. We have this golden rule of PDCA in planning, management. Plan, do, check, adjust. Plan things.
Check them.
Implement them, do them. Check what you've done and adjust if you need to. And this very concept has been mentioned by the sages over the centuries of who were the sages and the masters of wayfaring, the way of Allah. They would say, musharata, condition yourself. Make a condition upon you. That's planning.
Okay.
You plan and you condition yourself. I'm going to do this today or this time. Then muraqaba. Carry it out with attention.
Yeah.
Muraqaba, any carrying things out, doing things, the planning, the doing, muraqaba, with attention, with sincerity, with purpose. And then muhasaba, check yourself.
Wow.
And then muqataba,
adjust,
reform yourself.
So you
punish yourself, reward yourself, come back to what you should. So the PDCA concept of planning, a generic concept, is very much embedded in our tradition.
Amal Saleh, what is recommended?
That we want to achieve excellence, we want to reach out to perfection, we want to reach out to Allah, we follow these steps.
Thank you so much, Professor, for such beautiful tips and such a great formula that help us in time management. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any questions, any feedback, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also search us on the social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. We'll be there. And in case you want to listen to our program or our previous sessions as well, go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/encoicalloflamtab. Thank you so much for being with us. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.